So we start with John chapter 5, verse 1. After this, there was a festival of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, there is a pool, called in Hebrew, Bethzatha, which has five porticos. In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" This is where we're going to stop first. Jesus kicks this healing story off with what seems to be a rather harmless and quite considerate question, actually. He just asks, "Do you want to be made well?" It's almost like he's acting like a gentleman. "Pardon me, sir, if you don't mind, I could heal you if now is a convenient time for you. I could come back later if you'd like." We could read the question that way. But what if Jesus is being a little more invasive? What if he's not being a gentleman here? What if he is looking beyond just this man's physical well-being and looking straight into his soul? As if to ask, "Do you really want what I am about to give you? Do you really want the radical, life-upsetting, life-altering healing of God?" Sometimes, maybe you've experienced this, you're a patient sitting in the waiting room and they've given you all these forms to sign to give the medical professionals permission to do whatever they need to do for you. What they do might be unpleasant at one point. It could cause discomfort, but they're doing it to make you better. Perhaps Jesus is saying, "Do you give me permission, like the doctors, to mess with your life, to do what is necessary to make you well?" So is Jesus merely addressing this man's physical well-being, or is something deeper going on? The answer to that question is up for debate. Other translations of scripture I've read just of this question say, "Do you want to be healed?" That seems pretty basic. "Do you want to be made well?" It doesn't seem like there's more to it there. There is a translation that says, "Wouldest thou be made whole?" And when you think of wholeness, maybe something more than just physical healing, bodily healing is going on. The Greek word actually means healed or sound. So we could interpret this as merely physical, but it wouldn't be beyond the gospel writer, or Jesus for that matter, to probe the spirit that animates the flesh, to go into our souls. Perhaps the sick man, after 38 years, has grown accustomed to his condition, and Jesus knows this. Maybe he likes the possibility of a whole life, but the reality scares him. He's gotten used to the way he is. Maybe we like the idea of an active, engaging relationship with Christ, but the real change doesn't sit that well with us. There are times when some of us just prefer to be sick. I might just be speaking for myself, but I've seen it in other people as well. You know that kind of sickness where you're feeling bad enough that you're going to stay home from work or school, but you're still feeling well enough to enjoy a good movie on the couch. My son, on Friday night, we took a walk around the neighborhood, 5-year-old son, and he brought his bike with him, and he was doing great, feeling fine, going down the hills, going on the level ground. But when we started going up the hill, all of a sudden he said, "Dad, I got a stomach ache. I can't ride my bike up the hill. I need you to carry it. Oh, I can't do it." Well, then later on that evening when I said, "Let's go to Dairy Queen," he's like, "Yes, I want some ice cream. What happened to your stomach ache?" "Oh, I'm good enough to eat ice cream." You could call sicknesses like this a moderate sickness. We don't feel well, we know that, but we're still in control. things haven't gotten out of hand. When you're really sick, there's no question. You want to be made well. Movies and ice cream, they're the last things on your mind. You want your life back, even if it means work and school. You're desperate for healing. But this moderate sickness, it's something that, we kind of like. So like a moderate sickness, I also think there's a moderate Christianity. We know that we're not fully well, but we don't think our sickness requires anything more than maybe some Tylenol or NyQuil now and again. When Jesus asks, "Do you want to be made well?" we might respond saying, "Well, not right now. Hold that thought. I think I've got things under control. I have my religious ducks in a row. I pray a little bit. I go to church from time to time. I have my volunteer work." Now, if you were to ask me to do some of that light stuff, you know, easy stuff that I enjoy, I'll do it, but don't ask me to climb a hill or do strenuous Christian work. I'm just not well enough for that, Jesus. This kind of moderate Christianity, it's a faith but with no desperation. There's no real need expressed in it. I wonder if we do all of this moderate stuff because we're afraid of the pain associated with the healing process. If you've got a pulse, you know that healing and pain go hand in hand. The cut of the surgeon's knife, chemo treatments, rehabilitation, even something as minor as ripping a Band-Aid off an old wound. And sometimes that thought of the pain outweighs the reward. Sometimes we'd rather stay with what we've got, even though it's not that great, rather than going through the healing. So Jesus asks, "Do you want to be made well?" At the very least, this question hints at something more than polite conversation. And we will see as the story unfolds that the healing hand of Jesus reaches far beyond this one man's life. Jesus is stirring up an entire religious system. Through this one miracle, he questions the wellness of his own people, the people that the gospel writer John calls the Jews, the keepers of the law, the recipients of the covenant, the people who, at least by their own estimation, their own diagnosis, have a clean bill of health. Through this one miracle, Jesus asks you and me, "Do you give me permission to mess with your life? Will you let me do what is necessary, no matter how hard it may be, to make you well?" But Jesus, as so often is the case, doesn't relate to this man or to us for that matter in what you might call a conventional or straightforward way. Our passage continues picking up at verse 7. "The sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I am making my way, someone else steps down ahead of me.' Jesus said to him, 'Stand up, take your mat, and walk.' At once the man was made well, and he took up his mat and began to walk. Now that day was a Sabbath, so the Jews said to the man who had been cured, 'It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your mat.' But he answered them, 'The man who made me well said to me, take up your mat and walk.' They asked him, 'Who is this man who said to you, take it up and walk?' Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had disappeared in the crowd that was there." So Jesus doesn't wait for the waters in the pool to start stirring up before he stirs up the hearts and the minds of the people around him. And as we see in this story, he stirs things up in his characteristically rebellious and mysterious way. In addition to this miracle that he performs, Jesus does two things that grab our attention, that grab the attention of the people in the story. First, he tells the man to carry his mat on the Sabbath in clear defiance of the Sabbath law, in clear rebellion. And second, he mysteriously disappears into the crowd before the healed man gets a chance to know his healer. By breaking the Sabbath, Jesus is really stirring the waters. Not only does he break it himself by healing the sick man, but he makes that man an accomplice by telling him to carry his mat. In messing with the Sabbath, Jesus treads on sacred ground. He strikes at the heart of a commandment that is near and dear to the hearts of the people. Hundreds of years before Jesus, the prophet Isaiah declares, "All who keep the Sabbath and do not profane it and hold fast to my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer." This miracle then acts as a prelude to a confrontation between Jesus and the Jewish leaders. The breaking of the Sabbath serves as a wake-up call to the Jews who are caught in this moderate sickness with their law, their temple, their holy city. They've carved out a controllable, manageable faith for themselves. This miracle pushes their buttons. It exposes their love for that predictable, human-constructed religion. It introduces the unpredictable, living God in our midst. So Jesus may be a rebel here, but he's a rebel with a cause. And his cause is to bring to light the light of God who has come into the world. His cause is to clarify who God is by showing the world who he is. But in order to do that, he has to get their attention first. God is doing a new thing. The old is passing away. And nothing short of bordering on blasphemy, of breaking a command, is necessary in order to get the attention of his opponents. Jesus' rebellious, law-breaking behavior is tempered, though, by the mysterious way he comes in and out of the story. Verse 13 says that he disappeared in the crowd. He disappeared before the healed man could even catch his name. This healing occurs, but the healer is nowhere to be found. The waters have been troubled, but the troublemaker has fled the scene. Everyone's asking, where is he? What is he up to? So we witness the blinding light of God breaking into our world, performing a miracle, upsetting the status quo. Yet at the same time, that clear blinding light remains concealed, revealing itself only when the time is right. Jesus is purposeful in this mystery. He's never in a position where he can be manipulated or used by the people around him. As he says to Nicodemus just a couple chapters earlier, chapter 3 of John, "The wind blows where it chooses, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it goes." Yes, Jesus makes his mark clearly. The healing that he performs announces God's presence without a doubt. But Jesus isn't lightning in a bottle. He isn't some on-demand cure we can purchase over the counter. He doesn't fit into our moderate Christianity. Through his rule breaking and his silence about himself, Jesus takes the focus off of the miracle and puts it on himself. In his defiance of the law, we ask, what is he up to? In his covert actions, he gets us wondering, who is this man? The gospel writer at every point uses these signs and confrontations to clarify who Christ is, to put the attention on him. This is refreshing given that the modern mind tends to be preoccupied with questions like, who am I and what am I going to do with my life? The gospel writer wants to know, who is Jesus and what is God doing? You know, it's tempting for us to make it all about me, my gifts, my aspirations, but at every turn, Jesus won't let us. This healing isn't about the man being healed, but the healer. The Sabbath isn't about those who keep it, but the one who commanded it in the first place. Jesus enters the life of a man, the sick man, who by society's standards isn't much of anything, who can't really give you much of an answer to who am I or what am I going to do. Who is he? Just another invalid. What is he going to do? Nothing. He couldn't do anything if he tried. And when asked, "Do you want to be made well?" all he can say is, "Sir, I have no one." He has no one. But is he better off than we are who have everything? With all the time and energy we put into building ourselves up and improving our resumes, we're bound to lose sight of how completely and utterly dependent we are on God. This interaction between Jesus and the sick man, if we let it, brings us back to center. It turns our "who am I" question into a sincere desire to know who is Jesus. It replaces our obsession with "what am I going to do" with an ever-increasing awareness of what God is doing. While this man who has no one is made well, a sickness grows in the hearts of Jesus' self-sufficient opponents, and their attack intensifies. We pick up verse 14. Later, Jesus found him, the now healed man, in the temple and said to him, "See, you have been made well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. Therefore, the Jews started persecuting Jesus because he was doing such things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is still working, and I also am working." For this reason, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because he was not only breaking the Sabbath, but was also calling God his own Father, thereby making himself equal to God. Up to this point in the Gospel of John, Jesus is received well by the so-called outsiders. At the wedding of Cana in Galilee, by the woman at the well in Samaria, by his disciples. Now that we're in Jerusalem, he's received well by the sick man, but rejected by the insiders, the Jewish religious leaders. In the Isaiah passage I quoted earlier, the prophet is speaking, but he's not speaking to people born into Israel. He's speaking to foreigners who have joined themselves to the Lord. He tells outsiders to keep the Sabbath and hold fast to the covenant. As the passage continues, he declares that Israel's sentinels, the insiders, they're the ones that are blind. The outsiders are the ones that can see. This miracle story in John is an invitation to those who find themselves on the outside. But it's also a warning to those who are comfortably entrenched in the inside. We're both comforted and afflicted. We're assured and we're troubled. So we ask the question again. Do you want to be made well? The man with no one said yes. The man with everything say no. Who do you identify with? If you're like me, the answer is both, depending on the day. There are times when we feel like we have nothing and no one, and looking to Jesus comes naturally because we have nowhere else to turn. Other times we're so comfortable, so set in our ways, that it's tempting to shut Jesus out of our lives so that we can just keep life going as it is. Whatever condition you find yourself in now, moderate, sickness, or severe, know that when Jesus heals, he does it right. When he makes you well, he goes all the way. Sure, if you say yes, your life will be stirred up. There will be pain because your life will no longer be yours to control. But the healing will be real. The sickness will be taken away. The life eternal. Amen.